So
okay.
Marcel, is that, that's how you pronounce it? Marcel? Yeah. It's very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, no problem.
So you are a photographer, filmmaker. I think you've written some theater as well.
Yeah.
You're a playwright.
Yeah.
You've got a pretty extensive catalog, it looked like.
It's actually quite... I started late in the art field, right? And so, but it's kind of amazing. I'm grateful for what I have. Like I've written film. I've been in film and photography, theater. I've acted. I've directed. I've wrote. And so, I look back at these, since about 2003 or four. So it's been a long time. And I'm grateful for everything that's come to me and which I've been allowed to do. It's taken me all the way to Thailand and Cambodia. Oh, wow. for documentaries. It's taken me to the States. It's a lot of fun. I knew I always wanted to be an artist since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I grew up at a time that I didn't think I had a right to because of being brown. And living in Saskatchewan and not even knowing who I was at that time, right? Is that I knew because of people like Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin. Mm. and old movies from Russia and France and old CBC movies when you were a kid, right? When you stayed up late and you got to watch these movies that you're going, what the hell? This is beautiful. This is amazing, right? And so that's what took me away. And then, of course, the biggest thing is 1977, Star Wars came into my life, and I knew I wanted to be in the arts. But it took another from that point. So I think I was 12 or 13. It took I was in my 30s to finally do it, because in the middle, a lot of stuff happened that were beyond my control, that I had to deal with myself and everything else. That when I finally became an artist and the things that I get to do now, I'm amazed. It's that, and it's not, and I always hate this. Like even doing this, right? I sat there going, it's not that I'm ever trying to be humble. I just hate talking about myself.
Fair enough.
I think everybody does, most cases, right? But even art, I do it because I love doing it. Mm-hmm. And I love the stories. And I'm a firm believer that whether it's you or me or anybody else, we know ourselves best. We know our history best. We all know where we live best. Why don't we tell our own stories, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a big thing for me, is that when becoming an artist, I really also wanted to give back to youth. So it's teaching and showing, and because it also teaches me too. It helps me learn more too, right? I'm going, oh, I forgot that I knew how to do that. So I've had the opportunity to go all over Saskatchewan and teach photography and film and writing and acting. And that's been beautiful. And some of the stories and some of the films and some of the photography that I've seen young people do to kind of excite them, right?
Yeah.
Because I want Indigenous and Métis people know they have a right to be an artist. You just don't have to play sports. Like, I think that gets shoved down our throats in Indigenous communities. Sports, okay. sports, right?
Yeah.
But we forget about all those other kids that want to be artists and actors and poets and tell stories, right? But we build all these hockey rinks, but we forget about these youth, right? And money gets thrown. And we all know, like, you look in high schools now, music programs, the drama programs all kind of get, no money for that, right?
Yeah, they're not the top priority, unfortunately.
So it's really trying to push that. So I look back and I was looking at my CV the other day and how many things I've done. And I'm astonished sometimes, right? I'm going, holy crap, when do I have time for a life, right? But I've done a lot of small things, and I'm also pretty grateful that I live in a province that I'm glad that people phone me that I'm doing a good job, because then I know that I'm getting phone calls for a reason. I think I was afraid about 15 years ago, no, 10 years ago, when somebody phoned me and said that I'm a community filmmaker. Does that mean I'm cheap and easy? And I'm going, that scared me, right?
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with being a community filmmaker or a filmmaker that wants to help out.
Yeah, of course.
But I also want to get paid for it, right?
Yeah.
Not in a greedy way, but I want to, my time is my time, right?
Exactly.
Is that, and it kind of screwed me up. So it kind of pushed me and kind of kicked myself in the ass to kind of, well, let's go make some more movies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I like documentaries. A lot of my films are documentaries, smaller documentaries, bigger documentaries. And I love documentaries because, again, stories. But it's something I knew I always wanted to dramatic stuff and move on from documentaries, but still do documentaries because I've got like 20 documentary ideas in my head right now, right? Wow. It's finding money for them.
Yeah, of course, that's the biggest thing. Yeah.
I always tell people, if you have a story, go tell it. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to wait for money, don't wait for money. Do a GoFundMe, go do something, right? Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but you can go shoot a documentary with no money. If you're okay with sitting there doing all the shooting and doing all the editing by yourself and not getting paid, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's an important story, just go tell it. but it's been a lot of fun. It's theater is fun. Acting's been great. I always say that most of my acting career, I've died in a lot of the stuff I've been in. So either I'm a shitty actor or I'm really good at dying. And but I like it. It's good opportunities, right? It's another way to, I took acting to be a better director.
Because
if I was going to tell someone, go do this, right? I wanted to know what I was asking him to do. I don't expect an actor to go cry for me because it says it on my page. Why are you crying? Mm-hmm. How do you get there, right? And then I just had some good opportunities. I got some phone calls. I got to do some parts. And so theater and film and photography and has been good to me. And I'm so grateful for it. But it's taught me a lot. But I never stopped learning either, right? It's like this past week, I had to get past myself because I shot these interviews. And when I upload them, they look like crap. Mm. I'm going, what did I do? What's going on? I'm better than this. I've been doing this for 20 years. Why is it so shitty, right? But we all make mistakes, and technology sometimes is not good to us, right?
No, of course. I've experienced that.
Because we're trusting it, right?
Yeah.
We set everything up and put everything, and it looked like crap. And I felt so bad. I phoned the person I did the interviews for. I said, I'd rather not use them. Mm. I'd rather do it again. And if you have time, and they didn't have time, and they looked at him and they said they liked him, but I said, I don't.
Yeah.
And I said, so I don't know if I still should get paid for it, right? Because I said, I don't feel good about it. And then I just had to get my partner just said, get over yourself, and you did it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I have experienced a similar thing this week. Mm-hmm. I recorded another interview, and sure enough, I did my pre-check the night before. I went over everything, and the software I used to record just it had dropouts littered throughout the entire audio. Wow. And I couldn't fix it. So luckily there's a camera, and so I got the audio from that. But again, it's not as good.
It's not as good. So, no. And that was big. I remember my very first big documentary in 2008. An amazing, amazing documentary. It was based on my mom and a bunch of women that I grew up with. Hooker's a documentary. Mm-hmm. And based on women on the street, including my mother. And I shot this amazing, amazing interview with KT Troche, who was on it, and I got back to the house and there was no sound.
Oh no.
And I didn't have a second sound. Yeah. And so it was just the one sound that was I must have forgot to turn the lav on.
Yeah.
So I had to phone her back and say, hey, can we do it again? But it was not as, I'd say it was not as intense and as a good as an interview as the first one.
I imagine.
And you can tell she was pissed at me too,
oh,
right?
Oh no. Yeah, it doesn't
and
make it better.
Like, no. And I'm going, I gotta come back. But I've learned, and so it's like you just said, it's doing those checks and doing those checks and doing those checks and just trusting. And that's all you have to do, because sadly, it's a technology is still we think we rely on it so much. Mm. That we think that it's just going to work for us, right? Yeah. And everything's going to be perfect. I sat there for 2 days straight looking at my camera and looking at the settings and settings and settings. I'm going, where did this go wrong? Why wasn't this crisp, right? Mm-hmm. But I said, there was nothing wrong. So it's like, what happened?
Yeah.
So I just had to move on from that. But yeah, but overall, you know what? Art, I wish everybody would do it. I wish everybody would give themselves a chance to write something, to even do a podcast, right? Is that I said, because I run a youth center too on 20th and Avenue Y, Cornerwood Youth Co-op. I kind of used both of them to kind of help me with my life. Because a big thing for me is 30 years ago, 20 some years ago now, when I kind of changed my life to where the road I'm on now, I started working with young people and doing art almost at the same time. Even though I was working with young people and older people before that, I wasn't the same person I was 30 years ago, let's say.
Of course.
Yeah. But it really, it's, you never stop learning. And that's one thing I like about art, is that I've never liked that word master photographer or master filmmaker, right? And good for the people that want to call themselves that. No disrespect, sure. Right? But I'm going, it's such a... But I also remember, I have to remember that we live in a world of... Our egos are a big thing, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Our egos need that master thing. And I'm going, I don't want to ever be a master photographer or master filmmaker. I want to be someone that wants to just keep on learning and keep on going.
Yeah, it never ends.
It never ends. And I'm glad there's YouTube, but I'm glad there's like 16, 17-year-old young kids that know way more things than I do that I can learn from, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's been okay to be able to watch people. So I just shot a film this summer. And I like the collaborative aspect of it, right? Fine, I'm the director, I wrote it. It's like my thing. But I made sure that at the beginning I wanted everybody to talk to me. Mm-hmm. If you see something, if you want to change something, if you think something can change, I may say no, but at least give it to me. See if it does anything and see if it helps, right? And so it's letting people know that I don't pretend to be a when it's even writing or filmmaking or photography. Photography is more of a lone thing, but filmmaking in theater, you're working with people, right?
Yeah.
Most cases, except the writing. But it's making sure you can take the criticism, make sure that you can take ideas, because sometimes people's ideas are amazing. You go, mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't even think about that. That shot looks so much better than what I had in my mind, right?
So that's huge. Well, it's just, that's so important, especially because there's just no way to have somebody else's perspective without being them. So it's incredibly valuable. And it's really nice to hear you talk about that kind of stuff, because it seems like there's a lot of people today in today's world, and I'm sure there have always been, but that are just like my way or the highway.
Yeah.
And it's important to be the inclusive like that, because it just makes the work better. It makes any project you're working on better.
And it makes it easier, right? Mm-hmm. And it's so much more fun. It's like, I don't expect a Mickey Mouse kind of place where everybody's just, excuse my language, fucking around.
Yeah.
But I want people to understand that we're shooting something here. We have to get it shot. And getting people used to it. I hired, for this film that I just shot, I think 5 or 6 young people that it was their first film.
Okay.
And two of them were, it was probably, they've been doing it for a while. But I really wanted them to get used to it and make them understand we're not going to shoot it like a huge major film for $50 million where we're going to be here 14 hours a day. Mm-hmm. But there's a good chance we're going to be here for a full 10 hours, right? If that happens, that happens, mm-hmm. because a lot of the scenes were at night.
Oh, okay.
And so get used to it, right? It was interesting to see that and see how people would react to that, because I've been on big films where I actually stood there for 14 hours straight and did nothing, wow, right? And it's, you go, why am I here?
Yeah.
Like, what am I doing? But watching the film, watching everybody else is why I was there, because I got to learn from watching, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, is that it's a lot of standing around and waiting and standing around and getting ready and going. You may be up for 3 minutes and then you may be down for the next 6 hours, right? Mm-hmm. But it's that learning from each other. That's what I'm hoping that we all got from it.
Yeah.
And then hopefully in March, the film that I shot is, it's a pretty deep film. And it was important to me to shoot it.
Can it was you tell part me
of
about
my,
it?
Because it was part of my healing journey as well, because it was something that I wrote, I'd say I'm 54 now, at least 30 some years ago. And it came from my brother committing suicide.
I'm sorry to hear
that. And when he was 18, and I wrote this story kind of based on him and based on every people that I knew, because I knew suicide was out there. So when he committed suicide, it really opened my eyes to how many Indigenous people were committing suicide, and especially young people. And it really blew my mind at how many young people were losing, even today. So it hasn't changed, right? Here we are in 2022, and we're still losing hundreds of young kids, Indigenous, right?
Unfortunately.
And so when I wrote this, I wanted to write a story because I didn't understand, it's trying to understand what he went through, and I wrote a story of kind of, not revenge, but letting go. I wanted to know that at least if he committed suicide, because I knew the history of what we went through because we were together the most, right? Mm. I knew the sexual and physical and mental abuse and the foster homes and everything else that we went through, the lack of love and everything, that I'm hoping what happened, what the film's about is this young boy who basically decides one day to go get rid of everybody that hurt him.
Mm.
And so he goes and actually kills all these people that hurt him, from a priest to a teacher to an uncle. In the original movie, in the original writing, I killed his mother too. But I wrote it with a partner of mine, and she says, let's not kill the mom. so I didn't kill
her. She advised against it.
She said, because people were not sure if anybody's going to like him in the first place, let's make sure nobody ever like him, right? So I said, no, I understand that. So we changed that. But it turned out really, really nice. There's a twist in it. The big twist in it is that the whole thing is him. He starts falling asleep. His mom comes home from a party with an uncle that sexually abused him. And he falls asleep. But he basically wakes up and gets rid of the uncle, goes out and kills the priest, goes out and kills a principal that used to abuse his mom, and then goes back home, sends a message to his other brother saying, hey, I finally did what I said I was going to do. Now I'm done. And his brother knows what it is, rushes to his house, kicks down the door, and he kills himself. Jeez. So basically, but that's the biggest twist. The biggest twist about the whole thing was, he didn't actually go kill all those people. He was killing them in his body and his spirit. So if once he kills himself, he doesn't have to take them with him.
Okay.
So all his demons aren't coming with him.
Yeah.
He feels good. He's got rid of them in his brain. He got rid of them in his spirit, in his heart. I don't need you to come with me. Mm-hmm. And so it was him just basically killing his demons and then letting go, because now he can breathe. Because now he knows that these people aren't going to come with them to the other side.
Wow.
And so that's basically what it is. And that's the twist, right? And is that I'm hoping that he didn't bring all the hate and all the sadness and all the abuses and all these people that hurt him with him.
Yeah.
Because I know if I was going to commit suicide or die, I'd hate to bring all these people with me.
Of course, yeah.
Knowing that, terrible. Oh, you're still here?
Yeah.
Like, damn it, I don't want you here, right? Yeah. So it was a long process of trying to do this film, and a lot of insecurities for me, a lot of should I not do it, will anybody like it, will it have any impact, but I needed to do it. It was a story that I wanted to tell for the longest time, and I think it turned out all right. I'm having fun editing it right now, and I've gotten to the point now that I'm watching it and looking at it and going and smiling, going, and of course, I hate this part of being an artist, going, God, I hate this. Do I like this? Am I going to like this? But it was also a healing moment for me, because it's kind of not paying my respects to him, but kind of letting him know, because when I wrote it 3 years ago, I was a drunk. I hated the world. I hated me. I hated him. Mm. I hated that he committed suicide. I hated that he left me. I was angry at everybody in the world. And so doing it, being in this different place I am now, 30 years later, it was so nice to kind of get that off. It was kind of like a breath and going outside. It was like going outside 2 days ago in -40 weather, and breathing out for the first time, but letting that stuff go, right?
Yeah. I can't even imagine what that feels like.
And it felt amazing. I went home and I smudged and talked to him a little, and his name was Jean, Jean-Marie. But I was kind of my kind of homage to him, because he was a beautiful, beautiful young man. But I knew the life he led, because me being beside him, and I led the same life as him. But I also knew he wasn't going to survive to 22 or 23. I didn't think I was going to survive till 18. And my brother and I actually made a bet who was going to die first when we were, I think, 12 or 13. Mm. Because of where we were, the streets and violence and abuse. And I'm surprised, really, in all my family, I'm surprised none of us committed suicide, all but one. Mm. I'm actually trying to do a documentary on the rest of us that are alive, because I'm amazed that we're alive, all four of us, because every one of us should be dead.
Well, I'm glad you guys are here.
And we shouldn't be here, right? Is that for a lot of reasons. So I'm trying to shoot a documentary on that, because even families that go through what we go through, most families don't talk to each other, or they hate each other, or they've never talked in 20 years, right?
So fractured and broken.
Yeah. But we talk to each other still. We freak people out by joking about our past and our street lives and some of the things we did and the stupid things from the violence and everything like that. But that's the way we grew up, right? And
that's what we saw,
right?
Yeah. No, that's amazing. That's incredible. Because there's families that comparatively have no issues, and they can't even hold it together. So that's amazing.
No. Yeah. And they're a beautiful family. I look at my sisters and my brother, and I'm amazed with them every day on who they are and where they've come from and what they've done, and that they're still intact, and that they laugh and they smile and they get mad. And I know all four of us have a lot of stuff, right? And we've all dealt with it differently, right? And we've all been on our healing journey in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of it, is that healing journey, watching all of us go through it and where did we go and what did we need to connect to get away from that stuff that we used to be and to have the tools to be able to use it now. Mm-hmm. So when I get mad, when I get depressed, when I get sad, how do I deal with it now? I don't go drink. I don't go fight. I'm not in the drunk tank anymore. I don't yell at people. And I don't hate myself, right? Mm-hmm. And so those are the tools that have helped me get to this point. But art was a big part of that tool, right? Is using that art and that outlet. And even Core Neighborhood Youth Co-op, working with young people, was that outlet, because I saw young people, and I saw so many young people that were like me. They were angry and they were mad. And I laugh sometimes because, God, I must have been an asshole when I was like 17, right? I'm going, look at these poor young kids. And I'm going, and you see a lot of you in a lot of these kids, and you go, wow. So I'm hoping that I also give them stuff.
Right.
So they can get the tools. I can't do anything about their journey, but at least we can give them things, right? Hopefully this sticks on you, that in 4 years from now, you go, oh, I get it, right? That Marcel wasn't being an asshole this day. This is what he was trying to say to me, right? Because I don't want youth to go through what I went through, and I don't want them to go through what my family went through. I know that where you most of them are in a crappy, shitty, scary place, but shake those deck of cards, right? Yeah. Do something different. And I also realize the hardest thing for anybody, no matter who you are, is asking for help.
Oh, yeah.
Right? It's learning how to ask for help. Learning how to get mad differently. Learning how to cry differently. But even learning how to cry as a man, right? Mm. Start dealing with the misogyny and the patriarchy and quit pretending that we're just men and that we have to be tough and strong, right? I was supposed to be this. I come from a boxing family, and I'm 6'2", 250 pounds, right? I'm supposed to be a big, mean guy, right?
There's definitely an expectation.
Yeah, that I'm not supposed to be able to feel or be vulnerable.
Yeah.
I hope that I see it differently with a lot of, especially Indigenous men. I see that change happening, right? But we had to learn from a lot. We had to learn and take and get rid of some of that stuff, that patriarchy, the misogyny, and some of the things we learned from TV. Yeah. Right. This is how we're supposed to be. I grew up in a time where I saw nothing but violence. And so I was lucky that, and not saying that I wasn't an asshole, but I was lucky that I never wanted to be my dad. Mm. I never wanted to be my brother. I never wanted to be people that I watched beat people up, even though I beat up men. And I became a boxer for that too, because at least in boxing, you couldn't arrest me.
Sanctioned.
Yeah, I can get in here and kick the shit out of you and nobody could do anything. But then you can hit me, because I loved feeling the pain, right? Mm. I needed to feel that pain. And I wanted people to hit me. I would have my hands down sometimes and the ref would put your hands up, right? Nope, boom. I want to feel this, right? Mm. And so it's relearning those tools. And And I look back because my biggest thing is that I didn't want to be my mom in certain cases, and I didn't want to be my dad in certain cases, in a lot of cases. But that violence we normalized, right? We normalized that violence. It's like, this is the way it is. This is the way it's, even to that stupid line when I was, I think in my mid-20s, even before I quit drinking, hearing my foster dad, after me and my brothers fought outside, that's what brothers do. They fight each other. Mm. Okay, and we normalize that line, right? We expect boys to beat the shit out of each other, but that's not normal. It's not normal for us to go outside and beat up each other, right?
Yeah.
It's like, but it's something we've been taught all our lives as men, that we have to be this way. We have to be this way. So it was a lot of, there was a lot of as better like skin to shed, and waking up and going, holy crap, like that's so different. When you finally look in the mirror, I look at this, the person I am right now compared to even 5 years ago or 20 or 30 years ago, and going, I can't believe I was that guy. But I had to be that guy because of where I was. I had to be street smart. I had to be an asshole. I had to be a jerk. I had to be violent, because being on the streets, once you show a sign of weakness, there's a good chance you'll get your ass kicked.
Right, yeah.
And so you couldn't be that person. You couldn't be that. Like, I hid the fact that I listened to Michael Jackson and listened to Air Supply in Culture Club, because once people knew that you, even to that point, right, that you were sensitive and you cried and you listened to music like that, you'd get shit on, right? Mm-hmm. And so I had hidden records in my house that nobody knew that I listened to. And I was a huge Air Supply fan, which sometimes makes me laugh and going, what's wrong with you, buddy? I even went to their concert by myself, which was even sadder, right? And watching all these couples, and I'm sitting there going, Air Supply, I love you. But I had to hide from my friends and tell people, where are you going tonight? Well, I'm going someplace, right?
So weird. It's weird that there's lots of things like that, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And
still today, you can see it with a lot of young men, right? It's like, even with a lot of the young men that at Core Neighborhoods still, you see that still. And it amazes them when you tell them why I cried and I do this and I do this and I do this and that I go to counseling. Mm-hmm. When I heard, I remember the first time one of the youth said, you go to counseling, why? Are you crazy? I'm good. No, I think everybody should go to counseling. You should go to counseling. I said, everybody should get that stuff out, right?
Yeah.
And it screws me up on how we're still in that place, but I realize a lot of people are taught in a certain way, right? And this is the way we bring them up. And we tell everybody, if you go to counseling or a psychiatrist, you have to be crazy.
Yeah, it's only for people that are nuts.
But yeah. I said, no, it's for everybody. Learning how to talk, right, and communicate. And that is that part of that healing again. I remember again, when I first quit drinking, it was a big event. Like I had lost my son a year before. I'd been drinking and doing cocaine and fighting and having sex probably since I was 12 or 13 years old. I was sexually and mental and physically abused, foster homes. And when I finally turned, I had a son and had so many relationships. Because the relationships were mainly because I didn't know, understand love, right? I didn't trust anybody. Didn't trust me. I didn't trust women. I didn't trust anybody. Once you said you loved me, I'm going, well, I'm going to fuck this up because I know you're going to leave me now, just like my mom did. Because she said she loved me, but she left me, right? Mm. And so when I turned my 20s and finally started thinking about some of the things and the violence and everything I was going through and waiting to die. But then I got married. I was married twice, but my second marriage, we had a son, Jean-Marie, and he passed away when he was 4 and a half. So I kind of went into a tailspin. I knew I wasn't going to commit suicide because I couldn't do that to my mom a second time, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want my mom to go through another son committing suicide. So my decision was to move from Saskatchewan, move up north, and never, ever come back and hide, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, about a year later, I got stabbed 19 times.
Wow.
And that really changed my life. And that's what woke me up. I phoned my mom.
So you got stabbed 19 times in
one sitting. Yeah. One sitting. And and I'd been stabbed before, and I'd been shot at before, and I'd been beat up before, right? And so this all accumulated to this. I remember sitting there and waking up. I pulled a screwdriver from my leg. The guy that I got into a fight with is on the other side. We were friends. I don't remember the fight. And I had knocked his teeth out and broken nose. There was blood everywhere in my house. And there was blood all over me. Pulled a screwdriver out, phoned my mom. And I said, this has to stop. This is not who I am. Like, why am I here? And for the first 4 or 5 years of that was, it was a lot of crying and learning. Going to the counselor, psychiatrist for the first time, right? And looking across the room at the counselor and the psychiatrist going, what do I say? And she said, whatever you want. And I remember the first 2 times that I went, it was like, bleh, barfing stuff out, right? And crying and walking out of there going, God, I hate that, but what the hell is happening, right? But my mom was my biggest. For counseling wise, my mom and my sister and my brothers were probably my biggest help with anything. I knew I had to quit drinking. I knew I had to stop being this person because I knew this wasn't me. And I didn't want to be another stat. I didn't want to be just another dead Métis person, dead Indian. And going, another dead Indian from drugs and alcohol, right? And we get that still today, right? Is that
unfortunately.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be that. And I learned that from my sister a while ago because my sister worked on the streets since she was a kid, probably 9 or 10 years old, 11, and she said that line is that she said she didn't want to die on the streets. She didn't want to just be another dead Indian hooker, right? And I didn't want to be that, but I also knew that a lot had to change. And it was like now 54, that was when I was 30, 31, 32. Till now, it's been a lot of ups and downs. A lot of relearning, a lot of letting go, for better words. I hate that word letting go, but a lot of letting go, a lot of getting mad differently and trying to figure out why am I still going through a lot of relationships and why am I doing some of the same things? And I had to figure that out and realizing because I still wasn't being truthful to myself and being accountable to myself, right? I couldn't go say apologize to everybody that I hurt for the first 30 years, 20, 40 years, right? I knew that was impossible. I knew I never intentionally ever went out there to hurt anybody. But I knew that I had to forgive myself. And not forgive myself and keep on doing this stuff because then I'm just a prick, right?
Yeah,
forgive myself and learn and get and go do something differently. And then I think in 2016, I started doing sweats. I started doing ceremonies, sun dances, and not to save myself. I didn't want to pretend that here I am, I'm doing sun dances and smudging and being this spiritual person. That wasn't going to be my savior, right? Look at me now, right? I knew it was still me that had to be something, right? And I had to not show and prove to the world. But I realized in up to 2016, I think I was still trying to prove to the world that I'm not Marcel from 15 years old anymore. I'm not this violent little kid, right? I'm not this little shit, right? And so I put myself in situations, got the white picket fence, had a relationship. I'm going, hey, look at me. And then my mom died in 2016. And again, I realized that I wasn't on the right path still. It really, really impacted me when my mom died, and I didn't know why until my sister said almost like a year later, she said, remember when mom left you the first time when you were a kid? She left you again. And I went, holy crap, that's still on me, right? And so I knew that there was still a lot of stuff that I had to deal with, right? And love is still such a scary thing for anybody.
But
I also knew, like, coming from where I came from, because of my mom letting us go when we were 3 or 4 into foster homes, even though in those 10, 20 years that before she passed away, I talked to her and forgave her. And I understood why she gave us away because of where she was. And she was working on the streets and her violence and her sexual abuse, right? She was on the streets by the time she was 13. And she was sexually abused by uncles and stuff like that on her reserve. And so it was a big learning experience in 2017 when I realized, I'm going, oh my God, I'm doing the exact same things. Not realizing again when I was 31, a couple years after that, after I quit drinking, I realized that I spent probably a good 15 years of my life trying to die. Not commit suicide, because I couldn't do that to my mom.
Right.
But put myself in situations. Kill me, right? I got shot at. Come on, you missed, right? Yeah. Got stabbed 19 times. I'm sitting in my tub, crying and naked. And I'm not crying because of what happened. I'm crying because here was my chance to die, and you didn't give it to me. And that scared the crap out of me, that I lived my life trying to die. And that my whole goal in my life was to be dead inside, but pretend I'm living a good life, but die. And when I phoned my mom and told her that, she said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to live. But now it was that, and going back to the story after my mom, after 2016, when she passed away, 2017 was just a hell year for me, because I put myself back to being 29 and 30. Mm. I was sleeping with too many people. I cheated, and I was trying to ruin myself, because I felt like I was a piece of shit, because the one person who was supposed to love me left me again. And I didn't realize that until the end of that last year, that when my sister said, Mom left you again. Mm. I went, wow. I went, holy crap. And that terrified me, that I thought I was over that, but I wasn't. And I pretended to be over it, right? No, I'm okay. Mom's gone, right? And I realized, yeah, the one person I loved the most left me again. So who's going to be around, right? So that was a big year of going, okay, there's still work to do. But that taught me, no matter how many tools you have and how many counselors you go to and how many memes you read and how many podcasts you listen to, you still have to do the work.
Yeah.
And you have to kick yourself in the ass. And because you know right from wrong, you know what you're doing. But this is the one thing that I've learned over this time too, is hopefully your friends kick you in the ass. Instead of being a bystander, if you see your friends doing stupid shit or being stupid, friends have to start picking up and saying, hey, quit,
mm-hmm.
right? And the only person that whole time did it was my sister. My sister said, you're doing it, but I wasn't listening, right?
Yeah, and you got to hear it a lot.
You got to hear it a lot, right? Yeah. And at the end of that year, I realized, I'm going, why? Oh, I was just trying to ruin myself. I wanted everybody to hate me in this mm-hmm. town. I didn't want to get work anymore. I didn't want people to like me. I wanted to be ruined. And it was interesting because I went from, I think, about 230 by the end of that 2017, I was like 199. Mm. So I lost like 30, 40 pounds.
Yeah.
I was so small because I wasn't eating. I was unhappy. I was hiding.
Yeah,
and so after that, and then this is when I already knew of her, Celeste.
Mm.
And then I met Celeste, and I knew the work that I was doing for the first, like, say, 35, 40 years of my life, working with people and working with kids. And that's the other thing that's bad about certain cases of trying to help people, is you forget to help yourself. Is that you're saying all these good things to people, but you're not listening to yourself, right?
Yeah.
Going, don't drink and do drugs, or don't be this, right? And going, but yet you do the same thing. So
Yeah, exactly.
And then trying to find things. That's the biggest thing, is that my spirituality, the Sundance and ceremonies, a bit of Buddhism in there and a bit of other things. Anything that had to do with the earth was a big thing for me. It helped me be who I am, right? Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer of meditating. I'm a firm believer of grabbing a pillow and screaming the hell out inside of a pillow to get things out. Mm-hmm. And communicating and being honest. Boundaries, and being honest with people. And realizing that some people you just have to let go until they get to a point where they are. And also getting to a point that not taking everything else on yourself too, right? My family stuff has nothing to do with me. I don't have to have it on my shoulders. My friend stuff doesn't have to be here. Mm-hmm. My friends want to treat me like something, I can push them away, right? I don't have to take everything on. But I can set up boundaries. So it's getting all those tools and finding something, right? And not being too much about it too, because I know some friends that have gone from not drinking to all of a sudden, Jesus Christ is going to be saved their life, right? And everything, and 400 crosses up and everything like that. And phoning me every night and saying, hey, have you found Jesus Christ? Yeah. I'm going, don't go extreme, right?
Don't go overboard, yeah.
But it's, let's say you want to be helped, right? And so good for them, and no disrespect to that. And I don't want to sound too much that I'm making a joke out of it, but it's funny on how far people can go. But then not use it as an excuse to keep being that prick. Like, look at me, I'm saved, I'm good now. But go still do bad stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's that we're going to make mistakes, we're going to fall. But fall differently and get up differently. Don't do the same things. And if you're doing the same things, well, go do the work, right? And I think that was a big thing. And then meeting Celeste was really, really kind of a big thing for me. Like she really, Celeste reminded me of my sister and my mom because she made me be accountable for me.
Okay, yeah.
And because I think we at some points you sit there and you want people to give you answers, right? What's the answer? What do I have to do, right? Nope. You have to tell me, Marcel. You have to say something, Marcel. I'm going, damn it. Just like my mom. Like, I don't want to do it, right? Yeah. I don't want to keep learning.
But yeah, we want to just be told what we can do, yeah.
And so it was a lot of, again, me forgiving myself, me letting go of some stuff, me getting mad at myself and going, okay, don't be an asshole anymore. I've still got things to learn. And I'm still getting to that point of still learning. Relationships still tough with me. I'm in this beautiful new relationship. Even that, like these past few relationships that I've had, I still have to learn the boundaries and not trying to be too much of a helper because, again, your stuff is your stuff, right? Mm-hmm. My stuff is my stuff. Because I start dating you doesn't mean I've got to take your 40 years of stuff on with me, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But I can be here for you and I can be a companion for you. But I also don't want to be always the throwing board where every time I see you, it's got to be throw, right? Mm-hmm. And then we both have to sit there and pretend we're peaceful, right? After you came out with all this stuff. So it's a lot of learning, a lot of healing, a lot of crying. In the past couple years now too, it's really making people understand, do the work, right? And you can't force people to do the work.
And I can
be an asshole to people and go, just go do the fucking work, right? And I do, and I tell people, it's up to you, right? I'm not going to sit in front of people and sugarcoat shit or anything going, what are you doing, right? Fine, it's been a shitty world. And I realize there's a lot behind that, especially when I work with a lot of Indigenous people. Those intergenerational effects of residential schools and everything else and poverty and stuff like that. But try something, right? Mm-hmm. Do something different. And I know I look at myself, and again, it goes back to what I said at the beginning about talking about myself. And I've had people come to, I'm good proof you can get from someplace after living in complete shit and hell to get to where I am. Mm-hmm. I own a house now, right? I own a car. I have this beautiful home. I have too many Star Wars things, right? Is that I can go out for supper 3 times a week. Mm. And I have a voice and hopefully I use that voice well. And I hate calling myself an activist, but I know that's what people say that I am. And I know that's what I am because I want to be mouthy. My mom taught me how to be mouthy, right? Is that I just really want people to see the goodness in themselves. Mm. And I still go through my insecurities. I still think I'm too fat and I don't like my hair today and I don't do good work as an artist and I'm not doing a good job at Core Neighborhood. And there's nothing wrong with that. But now at least I have the tools to go, shut up.
Yeah.
Because that voice is lying to you, right? Shut that voice up. There's nothing wrong with having that voice there because it sort of keeps you humble in the same breath. Mm-hmm. But you don't have to believe it. You don't have to believe 400 different people I've met in my past 54 years that said, you're just a no good, dirty Indian. That was just a little kid that was from shit, right? You're not that.
No.
And I know I'm not that. But it's so hard not to get away from that because that's what you've been told your whole life. I'm 54 now and I still walk into restaurants or into places where I feel I don't belong because I'm a little Indian kid from Avenue O. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's really hard to get past that. But now I open that door and I walk through that door and I hold my head up high. I think the coolest thing that I've heard in the past year from a young kid at Core Neighborhood was I was walking back from the store and he came up to me and he said, "I like the way you walk, Marcel. You walk with pride."
Nice.
And that was so cool, right? Yeah. I don't walk with my chest out to pretend that I'm better than anybody else, that I'm smarter or anything than anybody else, but I hold my head up high because I've worked long and hard to get to this point, but I want people to see my face. I don't want to hide my face anymore. Mm-hmm. And I realize there's introverts and everything, and not everybody, I'm not saying everybody has to hold their head up, but it was so cool to hear that.
Yeah, I bet.
Wow. And I'm good. Yeah, yeah, good. I said, "I'm so glad that's what you got from that," right? Not that I was being an egotistical prick pretending that I'm, look at, I'm a big guy. I don't have to do that. I'm 6'2". Mm-hmm. I'm big already, right? People are going to see me no matter what.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's always funny when people, it was the other day, I was at my bank and my the person who was helping me came out of her office and I was the only person sitting in the seats. But she's looking around for me and I saw her talk to the receptionist, "Where's Marcel?" I'm going, "How do you miss me?"
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm a big brown guy sitting in front of you, right? She turned, "Marcel." I laughed. I'm going, "How do you miss me?" I said, "I'm not that hard to miss."
That's funny.
Yeah, but it made me laugh because I was right there in front of her and she looked at me twice.
Just, yeah. That's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
You know that kid noticing that it was pride and not ego is that's a perfect example of the fact that it has to be authentic.
Yeah.
If you're walking around, people can sniff it out. Oh, everybody. Yeah. If you're walking around and you're just trying to portray an illusion to hide something,
yeah,
people know very quickly. Like it's very, when somebody walks into the room and they're confident and they have that pride in them.
Yeah.
It stands out. It's really something fascinating to see.
And that's big, right? Is that I always tell people, don't mix up confidence and ego. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm confident. I'm a confident person. I know who I am and I know what I can do and I know what I can't do. Even what I can't do, I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. If I fail, we'll try it again, right? And so that's what we should be teaching people is be confident of who you are. Walk with a step, right? Mm-hmm. Walk with that kind of like little jump. And I love that. I love is that I look at the people I've been in my 54 years. Because I don't know who the real Marcel Petit was. Who was Marcel Petit when he was 8? Who was Marcel Petit when he was 15 trying to survive and not get killed on the streets, right? I was bouncing in a bar when I was 15 and a half years old.
Wow. Oh,
and I was violent. And I was, then when I was in my 20s, I was another Marcel Petit because I wanted to change from that Marcel Petit, right? I think this Marcel Petit is probably the closest Marcel Petit. And even before my mom died, was probably the closest Marcel Petit that I believe was true and honest. And this is it. And this is, I tell people, this is what you get.
Yeah.
Not in a cocky kind of way and not in kind of an attitude kind of way. This is who I am. I'm not going to bend over backwards anymore. I'm going to use my voice. I'm going to be boisterous. I'm going to fight for people who can't fight for themselves, whether it's homeless people or young girls on the streets, poverty, and in even a stupid stadium downtown that we're spending $100 million on, right? I'm going to fight for stuff like that, and I'm going to use my voice. And if that means this friend's not going to talk to me or this friend's not going to talk to me or people are going to walk away from me, I don't care anymore. Yeah. I've come to a point that our climate is dying. We're losing kids. We're losing a lot of people out there right now from because of homelessness and poverty. For us just to go home every day and put Netflix on and say it's not our problem, I think that's stupid.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. It is our problem. I can't save anybody. I'm not going to save anybody, but I'm not going to come out there with the savior mentality going, look at me, I'm Marcel. I do everything, right?
Well, I'm sure the work that you've been doing has saved people.
And I'm hoping it has done something, right? Is that I realize that a lot of the youth that we work with, it may not show for another 10, 15 years, right? It took me till I was 31 to get stabbed 19 times to finally get someplace, right?
It can take forever, but it's just the work. You have to do that
work. But I'm hoping that what we do at Core Neighborhood and the work I don't do at Core Neighborhood, what I do with my life, I'm hoping I help some kid out there not get stabbed 19 mm-hmm. times, not end up in suicide, not end up in jail, and not hating themselves. But I realize if it's going to take you till you're 30 to get that, that's your journey.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping they get it before. I hope they all get it before they're 25, right? Because I'm going, God, spending 30 years of your life unhappy and sad and angry and having that shit in you, that's not a way to live, right?
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting, right? Mm-hmm. It's now, but being an Indigenous person, you also have to deal with racism and poverty and homelessness and people treating you like crap because you're brown or black, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing, is that I tell people, you don't know what it's like to be a person of color. And I said, I don't want to live like that every day, but I still walk into stores and get followed.
Mm.
And it's stuff like that. Like even coming here today, right? And the neighbor asking me all the questions.
Yeah.
That makes me angry. Mm. It took me so hard not to tell him, can you please leave me the fuck alone?
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
But I also realize why he's doing it, right? That's great. But that made me feel like I shouldn't be here. In my brain, I should just walk away. If you wouldn't have come to that door right away, I was just probably going to go into my car and just sit there and wait,
yeah.
Right? But it's stuff like that, like driving into this neighborhood, because we all know Montgomery's a different neighborhood, right? Mm. Is that I realized me coming into Montgomery, if I drove around Montgomery by myself probably for the next 15 minutes, I bet there'd be cops following me in less than 20, right? Mm. But it's stuff like that, is that people have to understand it's tiring living like that.
Yeah.
And then you add on anger and sadness and unhappiness and hunger and all these things. That's tiring. Yeah. And I don't want to be tired anymore. And so I've also learned not to take stuff home. My mom taught me a good lesson years ago, going, it's not yours to take home. Why would you take it home? Why you're taking it home is your ego. And so I don't take people's stuff home. I know that's a sad life. I'm going to go home. I'm going to probably go cry. I'm probably going to smudge. But as soon as I leave certain places, I go home and go, okay, it's not mine. Mm-hmm. I feel it. I'm not saying don't feel it, because you cannot not feel that, right?
Yeah, of course.
Some of the stories that I've heard from kids, right? Sleeping underneath the couch so their dad doesn't see them. Mm-hmm. Not eating for 3 days. And going from house to house to sleep, right? Is that, God, you want the best for kids. And I know I can't take everybody home. And that's another lesson I learned from my mom, is that don't take everybody home. It's not your job, right? Is that how can I help them? Like teachers helped me, Celeste, and my teachers from before, and my mom, and teachers when I was in high school that helped me, even though I didn't hear it. How can I help them get the tools that they can make better choices out there, but be better to themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's like, as we said, it's going to take a long time, right? I always tell people, I wish I could have a Nerf bat, like a nice soft bat, and just hit them in the head, right? And every now and then put a rock in it. Boom.
Yeah.
Go, oh, there it is, right? Because that's the moment you have to get that aha moment, going, oh, that's what that meant, right?
When it sinks in finally.
And yeah. Finally sinks in. It's like, and I'd rather not, again, as I said, I'd rather not it sink in when they're suicidal or getting stabbed 19 times or getting beat up or in jail. But it's dealing with your trauma and dealing with that healing, right? It's us being honest with each other and yourself going, I need to do my work.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else can do it for you. And that sounds kind of mean and sounds kind of awful, but I look at a lot of the youth that I work with. You have to do the work.
Yeah.
I can give you the tools and I can open that door for you, but you need to walk through that door. I'm not going to carry you. I'm not going to kick you through it, but you need to do it. So we need to start being honest. Why am I going through 300 relationships? Why do I have 400 jobs? Why can't I keep a job? Why can't I keep a relationship? Why do I keep cheating? Why do I keep getting stabbed or beat up, right? Oh, it's me. But why? It's finding that moment. My moment was my mom giving me away when I was 3 or 4 years old. When I finally figured out that moment that everything that I've done in my life stems from that one moment, that just goes, holy shit, that's it. Not to blame my mom or give it an excuse, but you need to find that moment and then start unraveling it.
Yeah.
And start dealing with it, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of us have to do. But we have to be honest with that. And it's a hard, hard thing. But having good people like Celeste and my mom and my brothers and my sisters and good counselors and a lot of good friends that said, don't be an idiot, Marcel. Mm. It's so nice to have friends like that right now and that tell me honestly, right? And but then it's making sure you understand that voice in your head most times is telling you lies.
Yeah.
Because I'm always probably going to be insecure. I'm probably always going to feel that yuckiness of walking into a place and not feeling like I belong. Because that was most of my life, right? But now I walk in with pride. But I walk in and go, no, I belong here. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an artist. I'm executive director. I still get nowadays that, how did you get this job?
Mm.
And it's like, oh, that's right. I'm not supposed to have it, right? Because I'm a brown person who shouldn't be an executive director, right?
What a terrible question. Yeah.
And it's awful, right? Yeah. To still get that nowadays. But then I still get it from my own people, right?
Mm.
I get called an apple where I'm red on the inside and white on the inside and red on the outside, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of when I always tell people I'm more of a banana. And I said, then an apple. But it's that. And so it's learning to deal with that stuff and not take it too seriously because... Again, that's when you started learning, and I saw this the other day, is that a lot of people's shit has nothing to do with you. It's got to do with them.
Yeah, I believe that 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a big belief, right, that I have now. So it's learning to kind of go, it's got fuck all to do with me.
Yeah.
Right? But then that's where you let go of people, and that's where you have to let go. I had to let go of my family for, when I first quit drinking, I quit talking to everybody except my mom for probably a good 2 years.
Wow.
Because they were part of the problem.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to deal with them, right? My friends didn't know how to deal with them. So everybody I grew up with, they're either dead or they're not in my life.
Mm.
I respect them and love them, but I wouldn't invite them to my house. And I'd say hi to them. I had a friend once, about 3 years after I quit drinking, came to my house, brought an eighth of Coke and a Jack Daniels and a 12-pack. And he came to my house with all this. I said, well, you can't have this here.
Yeah.
I said, I don't do this anymore. And he really kind of affected me by going, well, you're a petite. This is what petites do. They drink. I'm going, wow, I don't want people to think that's all I am. I didn't want people to think that I'm just a whore and that I'm a drinker and that I'm violent. I don't want people to remember that when I'm dead and gone. I want hopefully to people, I know some people are still going to think that I'm still an asshole, which is okay with me. When I'm dead and gone and they want to think it was an asshole, at least it was an honest asshole, right? But then I thought when my dad died, I remember hearing from his funeral going, he was a good drinker. He was a good drinker. He was a good drinker. Going, yeah, I don't want to be remembered for that.
No.
My dad has 3 Canadian champ boxers. My dad helped a lot of young people on the streets. My dad's in the Canadian Boxing Hall of Fame. That's what people should remember.
Yeah.
Not that he was a good drinker, right? Nobody's a good drinker. I hate that one too, right? But it's like, so I really needed to change that. But you can't also, you can't change people's, what people think of you either. So that's not my goal either. I'm not trying to give people, this is who I am, right? This is who I am. It's getting the tools. It's the boundaries. It's healthy living, even healthy eating and learning how to just go for walks. And learning how to cry and learning how to get mad differently, as I said, but finding people that'll help you. If going to a meditation is going to help you, if Buddhism is going to help you, if indigenous spirituality is going to help you, find something. I'm a firm believer that you need something, right? Yeah. If you want to believe in God or the creator or Buddha or whoever you want to believe in, I think putting your feet on the ground, on the grass, on dirt, and having a connection is something that you need to have. Even atheists, I think, believe in something, right? I think we can all sit there and believe and go, no, I'm atheist. I don't believe in anything. Someplace in there, you believe in something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you got something, yeah.
And then learning how to be positive.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up with affirmations every morning. I do positive affirmations. I do affirmations when I go to bed. But it's without being fake, being positive, right? I'm not just happy just to be happy. I'm going to make sure that what's in my body and what's I put out in and out is also good for people. I want people to walk past me and feel something. I want that energy to go out, and I want my aura to be and my chakras and everything to be there, right? Mm-hmm. But I also need to make sure that I have some stuff too, right? That I can keep. So it's learning how to be positive without being such a, don't be a bullshit about it, and don't be fake about it.
Yeah.
So not being fake and the boundaries, and but that healing, it's like when you ask me to do this, I'm going, I'm not a teacher. And I talked to my sister about it, and she said, you are. I'm going, no. She said, you are. Look what you've been doing for 30 some years. Mm-hmm. Even when you were on the streets, Marcel, you were teaching people how to be good to themselves. Mm-hmm. And I remember that when I was a kid, helping people and feeding people and picking people up, bringing people to my house to feed them and shower, right? She said, you've always been this person. But it always, it's seen, but this is the part that gets me, is that I get scared that when people call me that I'm being an egotistical prick. So it's learning to go, no, I'm not an egotistical prick. I know the good stuff that I've done.
Yeah.
And I got to remember that. And so it's learning to pat myself on the back now and then going, good job, Marcel.
Yeah.
And you do this for a reason, right? And I don't have to be scared. Because when anybody asks me to do an interview, I always just go, oh, no, nobody. And then I always go, nobody wants to hear what I have to say, right? But it's my sister who said it too, and a few other people that I know, that something you say could help somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know that, and I hope some cases, whatever I do, I hope it has an effect on somebody someplace. I hope what I say and what I talk about, and even my films and my art and what I do at Core Neighborhood and what I do every day. I hope it wakes people up and go, oh, I didn't think about that. It's always goes back to that aha moment, right? Mm-hmm. Having that light bulb go, ah, oh, I get that.
Yeah.
And I'm going, huh. And I said, because I still get it. I still get some of the things. I get into a fight with my partner now and then. I'm going, ah, oh, I was the asshole, right? And then learning to say sorry. I'm going, it was my fault, right? And so you have those moments going, yeah. Because I still have things to work on, right?
Yeah.
Because I still have those fears like every other human being, but I have those fears of going, no, right? Right.
Yeah. Well, for sure. And yeah, I mean, there are no better lessons than the ones that you're trying to teach the youth through your, I imagine through your films and, yeah. and then through the youth, that youth group as well. There's yeah. just, I don't know if there's a more noble pursuit. Just trying to give back, and you're doing it exactly the way it should be too, because, and it's so amazing that we have people like you around, and I'm very, very thankful for that, because it's so easy for somebody to just be hurt and in pain yeah. and feel that. And then just to, even if they are trying to help, it's very difficult not to just come at other people and say, no, this is the way you need to do it. I've yeah. been here. Yeah. You need to. And it just, I'm fascinated by your introspection. You look, yeah. you seem like you've put so much thought into what's happened to you and how it's, you just don't want it to happen to anybody else. No. And it's, yeah, it's
and amazing. And that's big, right? Is that, you don't, because it's so easy to get that savior mentality that you see a lot. Saskatoon's favorite, to me, Saskatoon is famous for savior mentality.
Mm.
Whether they're brown or white or whatever color. There's a lot of saviors out there, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I see it, and I think I see it, and I know other people see it, but I didn't want to be. When I quit drinking and when I changed my lifestyle and I decided to work with young people, I had to make sure that I wasn't doing it to become a savior.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do it because I think I had to do it. I wanted to do it because I actually wanted to do it, because I give a shit.
Yeah.
But I look back at what the Creator has given me, and what the grandmothers and grandfathers that are around us have given me, and the people that have passed before us that have fought for us to get here, they've given me an opportunity. And I look at it that way, getting stabbed 19 times and shot at and killed and beaten and all these other things that could have made me the unhappiest person in the world.
Mm.
Somebody's given me a chance. And why would I waste it just sitting at home?
Yeah.
and being angry at the world or thinking that I don't have to do shit, right? I have to. I believe I have to do something. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't doing it because I'm going, hey, look at me, I'm better than you, right? And that I'm a savior. Mm-hmm. And I want awards, and I want this award and this award, and I want people to give me this award, right? I don't need any of that. My reward is seeing a kid wake up in the morning and show up at 9 o'clock at Core Neighborhood ready for school, mm-hmm. knowing that they just had the shittiest night of their life and they didn't eat the day before. That's a reward to me, that they came because they want to do something better for themselves, because they see something better for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Even though, again, their journey is their journey. But again, I hope that everybody that I work with at Core Neighborhood, I hope we're giving them all the tools and all the good stuff, even though some of them hate that good stuff, right? Going, yeah, get it off me. I hope we're helping them that in 10 years or 2 years or 20 years, they go, yes, yeah. I am worth it. I'm a beautiful person. I can do whatever I want, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a hard thing for any human being.
Oh, yeah.
But you put on the stuff that we talked about, you put that shit behind you, it's even tougher. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be money that saves you or helps you, right? And that's the other thing, is making sure people understand it's not money. It's you. It's still just you, right? Mm-hmm. You're the one who has to make that choice not to do drugs, not to go cheat, not to go drink, not to fight, not to hang around certain people. But if you're used to that, it's hard to see beyond that door, right?
Yeah.
So it's finding new things and realizing it's lonely. It's a lonely existence sometimes, right? I was lonely for the longest time, but I'm going, it was worth it. Here I am, 54. I don't end up in the drunk tank anymore. I'm not getting stabbed anymore. And it's amazing. I've got a home. I've got a bank account. I've, like I said, way too many Star Wars things and way too probably Converse shoes, but I'm just me now, yeah. Right? I'm not that scared little boy. Marcel is someplace in here still, but now I can talk to him and go, No, it doesn't have to be that way. He doesn't control me anymore. And I don't allow him to control me. He lives in me, but he's there. But now he's not coming out going, hey, let's go do this, right? Let's be scared of everything.
Yeah.
And but let him know that it's okay. Life is okay. You're okay, right?
Oh yeah. Well, I think you're a perfect example of the fact that it can take sometimes decades of work. And people, I think unfortunately there's a lot of hurt people in the world that just they're like, oh, I don't need to go to the therapist, or I don't need to go to the psychiatrist, or I don't need to get help. Because I think a lot of the time it's that they've tried and they've gone and they've spent a week or 2 weeks and they just don't feel better, or like, I'm not feeling the way I feel like I should. And then they give up again and fall back into that cycle. But sometimes it can take 10, 20, 30 plus years, and it's always worth it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with failing. I think failing is good, but if you're failing all the time, then do something, right?
Yeah.
Like my sister, when I quit drinking, I just quit. I have not had a drink since I was 31.
Good for you.
I quit cold turkey, right? People ask me if I've gone to AA or something like that. No. I said, I knew I shouldn't drink.
Mm-hmm.
I said, because I got stabbed 19 times and all this other stuff, right? Mm-hmm. I knew when I was 13 years old, I shouldn't be drinking. And I knew when I was 12 years old, I shouldn't be doing cocaine. But that was my life, right? But it's my sister. I've watched my sister and my brothers go, they fail. They get drunk, but they get back up. But they know that they don't need to be that person. And the longer the time, the longer the span of you failing gets longer and longer, then it must be working, whatever you're doing, right? Mm. But it's getting to that point of going, Why am I here? What was it that happened that made me come here? Yeah. Was it unhappiness? Was it job? Was it work? Was it a relationship? Or was it just me feeling sorry for myself, right? And I think that's what you got to get to. But again, it's pinpointing that one event.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing. You need to get to that event. Everything else is there. But what is that one event that made you have all these events? Because it's there.
And where does it start?
Yeah. Where does it start? And it's it's finding the tools and doing the work, and finding the right people, right? Again, it's who you surround yourself with too is a big, big thing.
Yeah. Your support network is incredibly important.
Yeah.
I just, finding where it starts too is really, really interesting too, because I think that a lot of people, unfortunately, it hurts so much that you want to avoid it, right?
And
healing your mind and your body and your person and your experience is just like, more often than not, you have to go through a lot more pain.
And that's scary, right? It's like being in a bucket. People would rather be in a bucket of shit because that's what they know.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out of that, you actually have to face all that stuff. And that's scary. That's scary once knowing that you have to, but because then you also have to face your accountability of your own shit, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because I could sit here and blame you and blame everybody for everything I've been through. But at some point, I was doing it to myself.
Mm.
My mom wasn't behind me. People from residential school and every other white person wasn't behind me when I was doing coke or fighting somebody or cheating on somebody. That was me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was reasons why. Now figure that out. And that's a scary, scary place to get to. So I understand why people don't, right? My sister is still an alcoholic. One sister is still going through her shit. She's gone to detox probably 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
But she is where she is. And all I can do is show her that I love her and that we love her and that we're here for her. Her journey is her own journey. And she might be happy where she is. And that's the other thing we have to remember is some people are happy where they are.
Yeah.
When people always talk about East Hastings or homeless people and they're so unhappy and so sad, some of these people are the happiest people ever. That's where they're the happiest.
Yeah.
Some of these people are never going to make it in a house because they've been where they've been for 30 years, mm-hmm. right? And I want everybody to be housed, but I know there's some people that are never going to be able to be in a house.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice knowing that we can give the dignity. I know a couple homeless people in the past 10 years that have died in a house. At least their dignity to have been passed away in a house, in a room, rather than on the side of the riverbank, right? But it's terrifying. I remember facing some of that stuff and getting to that some point. And it's even talking to my mom. When I started talking to my mom and telling my mom for the first time, I hated your fucking guts. I wanted you to die. I never wanted to see you again. I hated you for these reasons. But when I realized that she did her stuff because she was going through the stuff she was going through, I also had to forgive her. But then I had to forgive myself. And we hugged and we cried and we laughed and we got it all out. And I realized she didn't know any better too, right? The way she was brought up. My mom got sent to a residential school by the time she was the same age as me, 3 or 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then what her mom and dad went through being back in the early 1900s on these prairies, right?
Yeah.
Is that we've got a whole generation of people who don't have the tools.
Yeah. And multiple generations.
Yeah, you look at my age group, especially men, we're a bunch of assholes because we got taught to be assholes. We got taught to be patriarchy and misogyny and we got taught that we have to be this way. And then you look at the generation before me, same thing, but they were getting taught by non-Indigenous people and white people on how to be misogynist and pricks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we got taught by them. Then we got taught by TV going, this is the way we're supposed to be. And I'm going, wow. So there was a lot of unlearning to do. So all that unpacking and that peeling, right? It's that peeling that skin off, and going, oh, and going, that's gross.
Yeah.
Like, but deal with it, right? Feel it. And then because every few weeks or every few months or every few days, you're going to take that peel off and going, holy shit, I feel lighter.
Yeah.
This feels so much better. Like, what's going on, right? And then you look back at some of the stuff you're doing and going, wow, I was an asshole, right? And what was I doing? And so that's a big, big one, right? And getting to that point. But I think you sort of said it, that at the same time doing with your physical, and mental and spiritual, you have to deal with all aspects of the healing.
100%.
Right? You can't just deal with one and think everything is going to do. And I'm not saying you have to become this big jogger or workout, because that's, again, I've seen so many people go extreme. They go full Jesus Christ, yeah. Right? Or they go full jogging, where they're jogging and becoming this full vegan and everything, right?
Yeah.
Just be you, right? Mm-hmm. But find it necessary. But again, that shows you that a lot of people are still dealing with some stuff if they go full something, right? Is that there's still something missing, that if you're going that far extreme, something's going on, right?
You're avoiding something.
You're avoiding something. It's like, there's nothing wrong with having a Big Mac now and then, and there's nothing wrong with eating KFC now and then, mm-hmm. but don't eat it every single day.
Exactly.
But then that's also my entitlement to think that people can afford to eat healthy every day too, right? So it's learning different things. So I've got to remember, I'm really privileged compared to where I was 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I can go to my fridge and have something to eat. I can go eat out at a restaurant. And so I have to understand that and remember my entitlement too, right? I have to remember in the same case that people don't have the same people behind them like I did. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take heart. It's going to take some time for some people to get to that point, as we said, right? But that's the part I hate sometimes.
Yeah.
I want people to get it. I don't want people to go through pain. I don't want people to do that. But that has nothing to do with me.
Yeah.
Again, their journey is their own journey. I'm just hoping, again, like I said, that some of the shit sticks on them. And that we all say at Core Neighborhood that I'm going, what we try to do is that we're hopefully helping that when they leave at the end of the day, that we're helping them make better choices. And I'm hoping that's
perfect.
And yeah. I'm hoping that sticks with them, right? Is that they're sitting there going, maybe I shouldn't be drinking at 2 o'clock in the morning, right? Maybe I shouldn't be hanging around with this person, mm-hmm. right? And because I got to go to school tomorrow, or I got to go to Core Neighborhood tomorrow, or I got to go work in the wood shop tomorrow, right? Is that I hope they just make better choices.
Yeah.
As teachers, when I was a kid, was probably trying to do, but I never listened, right? I have some amazing teacher, Rob Norris, Joe Gallagher, what's his name? He taught me math. I hated math, and I hated him for helping me with math. But he helped me get 50% on a test.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that those teachers and Mrs. Laverne, the librarian up in Christopher Lake, those teachers did so much for me. But I didn't know how much they did for me until I was out of my hell.
Yeah.
And I did a movie one, a couple of them. Because I wanted to show them that you guys are my heroes, right? That's amazing, that the effect that people have on people, and then you finally get it going, oh. Because I remember Joe Gallagher at Nutana telling me that I was a good person, that I was a good person, that I'm a good person, going, nope, can't hear you. What? I don't know what that means, right? But still today, when I get compliments, when even my partner tells me you're a good person, I'm going, oh, okay, it's okay to feel that, right? My sister always tells me, shut up and feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't throw it away. Yeah,
that's good.
Swallow it, right?
Yeah.
But then again, it's learning to be humble about that, yeah. Right? So now I'm okay with feeling things. If somebody calls me a good person or that I'm doing a good job, okay, I can feel that, right? Mm. Not just going, yeah, okay, see ya, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think that so much of the anxiety and pain and just like general like disillusion that people are experiencing is that the life they're living is here, and everything that goes on in their head is here, and then this is who they really are, and there's a congruency, there's a difference between those two, and I think right. that the closer you can bring those together, the happier you'll be. And I think that it's the first step is you gotta understand that it's okay to be okay with who you are.
Yeah.
You don't need to separate those two things.
No. And that's a big thing, is learning to be okay with who you are, right? Like who I am now. I love who I am now. I love that I get to do the things I do and be the person I am with my art, my work, my life, even the way I look, is that I'm happy the way I am. Mm-hmm. I love a little bit of my chub. I love my hair. I love my face. I love the way I dress. Because I'm not here for a popularity contest, right? Yeah. It's social medias have skewed everything so much that we're all waiting for likes, right? The life is about likes, mm-hmm. right? No, forget that. Get off the social media. Just be you. Be yourself. There's nothing wrong with crying. There's nothing wrong with getting mad. There's nothing wrong with being upset. But don't be an asshole to people either, right?
No.
And it's that. And if you are an asshole to people, learn how to be accountable for that and learn how to apologize to people, right?
Yeah, own up
that,
to it.
Own up to it. Is that, and there's a reason why you were mad or angry that day. It's like I said with my partner in fights, is that I've learned to apologize. And and that's not just her, but other ones, right? Too, is that it's taken me a long time to get to this point. Now being 54, to get to this point now in my life, it's taken a long, long time. A lot of kicking myself in the ass and a lot of growing up and a lot of waking up and a lot of going, but I've had to learn a lot. It didn't just come overnight, right? I had to learn books. I learned books, read books on psychology, learned books on this, read books on this, and taking stuff from things, right? Because not every book is going to be right, and not every book is going to be what you need or what I need, right? Because we all come from different places. So take a little bit of something and use it. Use it to help you. And I love some of the stuff people are saying. I'm really, right now, the person that I'm hooked on is Gabor. What's his name? I forget his last name.
Is he a doctor?
Yeah, he's a doctor.
Gabor.
Gabor Net? Nate?
I think I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
But he's amazing. Yeah. He, like, listening to his stuff about trauma and stuff like that.
Is he the... He believes that... like all addiction is the result of trauma.
I've
listened to him before. He's really incredible.
And so I've been listening to him on podcasts, and my partner bought his book, so I can't wait till she's done reading it so I can read it.
Yeah,
because her and his son and him did a book together. But listening to him has really, really helped me still deal with my stuff. I'm going, I get that now, right? Yeah. There it is. And it's some of the, because it's some of the stuff I can't vocalize that is in here, but I'm going, there it is.
Yeah.
That's what I meant 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. I remember saying that, right? And I remember saying this. And what's her name? Brené Brown?
I don't know that name, no.
She's just as amazing. I remember my sister introduced me to her, and she's amazing because she's, and again, it's that being honest stuff, right? So when you listen to people like that, you go, there I am.
Yeah.
And going, and so it's being open to that stuff, but using that stuff to help you. And that's the biggest thing, is find that stuff that helps you. Don't go pay $200 a minute to go talk to a person about your horoscopes, right? And if that's what you need and that's what you do, good for you. But horoscopes and being a Sagittarius, and when people come tell me, you're a Sagittarius and you're this way because, yeah, no. I said, it's not because of the stars. It's not because of Sagittarius. It's not because of this. Yeah. I'm this way because of this,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? But I know people that go pay $120 a half hour to go talk to somebody about their horoscope. I'm going, wow, why don't you just pay me that? I said, I'll tell you what's wrong with you.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, If you like it and it makes you feel better, that's one thing. But it can be pretty expensive for something that doesn't really seem to...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the same thing with books too, right? Buying books and stuff like that. And I think that's what even doing this with podcasts, right? Podcasts have become so much easier that you can put headphones on and go listen to those two people. And even listening to yours, right? And beyond the teacher, right? Is that listening to something that you're going to get something from it.
Yeah.
If you're going to listen to, go listen to Celeste and hear her, you may get something from her. You go, I get it. Not everybody's going to like Celeste. Not everybody's going to like me. Not everybody's going to go, no. The way they do it is, I don't like. That's fine. But we're not saying that I'm right or she's right, right? Mm-hmm. We're just saying that find it. Do something about it. Get that and start doing it and start opening their doors. And because... again, as we said like 15, 20 minutes ago, being in fucking hell is so tiring.
Oh, it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. Why do you want to be angry all the time? Mm. Why do you want to be sad all the time, right? But again, brown and black people, it's hard not to be exhausted, right? How many of us are dying in Canada and North America, right? You look at the Missing and Murdered Indigenous women. They just found four or five more women in Winnipeg, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard not to be exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard not to deal with all this stuff and have it on you. But it's, I hate the fact, and I've told this to my partner a few times, I hate the fact that we have to go home every night and just let go of everything.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, it stays with us.
Yeah, right? It'll kill you, yeah.
And it'll kill you. It's like, because it's so exhausting, right? Is that I don't want to live like that all the time, but it's hard not to because it's around us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Saskatoon and the poverty that's around us all the time. It's hard not to see it. It's hard not to walk out the core neighborhood's door and see that.
Yeah.
Even coming here today, we went to the store earlier, and we saw two people that were you can tell were homeless. So it's there in front of us. So it's hard not to feel it. But if you're going to feel it, make sure you don't feel it because you want to be a savior, or you want to fix things, or you're just feeling going, oh, just for the hell of it, right?
Yeah.
Then go do something about it. And make that change, right? Is that why aren't 300,000 people in Saskatoon saying something about a stadium that's going to cost us all money, right? Why aren't 300,000 people going to talking about poverty and homelessness? Because more than half of us think it's not our problem, and that we all put those blinders on going, no, if I don't see it, I don't have to see it, I don't have to feel it, right?
Just like little kids.
Yeah, yeah, but we should be feeling it. These are human beings, whether they're brown, black, white, or whatever. These are human beings. And I hate using cliches going, it could be your mom or your auntie, right? And that to me, I hate that shit. If I have to use cliches to make you feel something, then I shouldn't be talking to you. Because it shouldn't take that, right? It shouldn't be taking you see a UNICEF commercial with dirty, dirty kids with flies on them going, oh, I should give $5, right? It shouldn't be that. You should actually go, because we're human beings, we live in the Bible Belt.
The Bible Belt?
Yeah, the Bible Belt. Saskatchewan's like one of the most known places for the Bible Belt, like the states where it's all Christians and they care about everything, okay, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But they pick and choose what verses they want, right?
Yeah.
They and it's like I remember learning that one of the places in towns only like Indigenous people because God burnt us and that's why we have dark skin.
Oh, geez.
And that you have to save us, right? And I'm going, so they pick and choose. Quit picking and choosing. These are human beings. And I'm going, I don't want people to fucking be homeless on the street. Like when it was minus 40 the other day, I'm going, God, I hope everybody has a place to sleep.
Yeah.
I know it's not up to me to drive around everywhere and make sure, but at least I can have that moment of smudging or having a prayer and making sure that I hope people have a safe place to be, mm-hmm. right? And I know a lot of homeless people that know the best places to sleep in this town.
Mm.
They know where to be, where the heat's coming out, and where they can rest, right?
Yeah.
And I'm so glad they do. And I'm so glad they're out there helping other people. And because we can't see it all either, right? And I don't want to see it all, and I don't want to expect to be see it all.
Yeah.
Because as we talked about the exhausting, I said, I can do this. I could be on 24 hours a day, but what am I doing for myself, right? What am I doing to myself if I'm on all the time? So that's where art comes in, watching sports and reading and learning to go. And I hate it. I hate that letting go, right? But learning to go home and go, you don't have to bring it home with you all the time, mm-hmm. right? There's caring and caring and caring. But if that caring is coming to a point where you're getting angry all the time, because I realize I could be angry all the time, but I don't want to be angry all the time. I'm grateful and have so much gratitude. And I respect this world so much and the people around us that I just hope that in some ways that we're actually moving on and we're starting to care about each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard. It's hard that the racism that's out there, the bystanders, the people not giving a crap, and the people pretending to give a crap, there seems to be more of them. And that's what's terrifying, is that people, more of us, and I hate to say us and them, but we have to start using our voices more. And I think that's what I'm hoping. I hope when we're teaching young people, I hope I'm teaching young people to be assholes and being able to say no to somebody and no, this is not right. Because we have to start saying no, right? It's not right. This is not right. It's not right to treat people and human beings in a certain way. Because why? Because we wouldn't want to be treated like that, right? Yeah. I hope that makes sense. I hope everything I said made sense.
No, no, it makes total sense. I'm just listening, absorbing it all. Your story is incredible. And
thank you.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like I said before, the work that you're doing and that we have people like you giving back. And, you know, you said earlier that, I can't remember what you said exactly, but you're talking about love and how your support group, needs to love you and these people around you need to just love you. And it's, you know, a lot of people feel like it's a cliche and, but there isn't really anything better.
No,
like
no.
You need people around you that, that care about you that deeply. And yeah. You need to care for other people that deeply too. Yeah. And that's the only way that things like this get better. Right? So.
It's scary, that word love, right? And it'd be interesting to do a documentary on just that word love and where it came from and how important it is to us in our bodies and our spirituality and our skin and our brains and everything is that. But then it's also such a scary word for all of us, right? Yeah. Once somebody says they love you, and that's a huge commitment. And then once you say you love somebody, it's a huge commitment. But I think we've also in a way frayed that word in a way and we've confused it and we throw it around to each other sometimes. I actually really love everybody. Mm-hmm. And even my enemies, even the people that don't like me, I love them. And I tell people, because I said they're still human beings. I love people differently. My sister and my partner and my Converse shoes, right? I love them all differently and for different reasons. Mm. But it's learning not to just throw it around either, right? Don't say you love somebody unless you're ready, right? And when somebody says love you, it's like my sister says, feel it, right? Because when somebody says that, that means a lot to them, for them saying it to you too, right? But that love word is like, yeah, that's a beautiful, scary, scary word to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I can understand why it's terrifying. But it's also a word that can tear you apart. And it's a word that can bring you up.
Yeah.
And it's where you are at that position in your life, what it's going to do to you, right?
Well, yeah, and I think it's so scary because, like you said, unfortunately, there are people that you love that do leave you. People experience that, and then it comes with so much. When you love somebody and people are loving you, there's the exchange is so powerful. Yeah. There's just so much that you have to give for that to be real, and so much that you have to receive from somebody else for it to be real.
Yeah.
And so you are risking a lot when you love people.
Oh,
but
yeah.
There's nothing. There's nothing more important.
And not mixing it up, right? It's sex and love and stuff like that. I used sex for the longest time as love.
Mm-hmm.
From watching my sister's work on the streets and my mom being a hooker and using sex. That's what I thought love was. I thought sex was love. And that's why I became such a, as I tell people jokingly, friendly.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought that's what love was. I'm never going to have this connection unless I have sex and sex and sex, right? And so it's learning that word. And again, but it goes back to that healing, right? Going, oh, that's why I did it. Oh, this is why, right? Because my belief is that if somebody wants to be sexual with me, oh, that's love. And I think I remember early, even before I started healing or anything healing, I was in my early 20s and I was just finished sleeping with a person that I was at the bar with and I was lonely. I was lying in bed with somebody, but I was lonely and sad. And that fucked me up. I'm going, but I'm here with somebody.
Yeah.
Why am I feeling lonely and sad? Oh. Well, the first thing I did to forget that, did some coke and did some drinking. Because that's nothing, right? So it's really getting to that point. But yeah, that love word, it's I know even with my partner and I, right, is that trying to deal with that love word, right? Is that I know we make sure that we understand love. We love each other. We care for each other, right? And we're not just saying it to say it, right? My family, my sisters and brothers, we say it to say it. And we jokingly say it. It's like I told my brothers and sisters this morning, I love you fuckers, right?
Yeah.
And because that's who we are, right? And letting them know, and that's because there's nothing wrong, and there's nothing better than hearing from somebody that, hey, I love you today.
Yeah, you know, you're 100% right. It's one of the greatest things on the planet. And, you know, it's so great. And but it can also be used in a negative way too, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, I noticed that I just... One of the things I like to hear the least, or I hate to hear, is I love you as an apology. I don't know if you know what I mean. Yeah. Sometimes you get into an argument, somebody's like, oh, I love you. And it's so sad, you know?
Yeah. And again, that's that learning thing, right? Is that... being accountable and getting into a fight and then right away going, I love you. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, don't use it for that, right? So that's where you learn to use it, but we've screwed up that word so much, that word love, right? The way we use it, the way we use it for each other, and the way we use it against people, the way we use it to get people to feel sorry for ourselves, the way we get people to forgive us, right? It's like, really use it, really mean it, right? It's like, don't throw it around like it's just that word, right? But it's become romantic movies, and it's become this is what love is, right? It's that, just every now and then I think you just need to slap yourself in your head and go, why am I saying it? Am I going to say it to somebody? I've been in front of people where they said they've loved me, and I've gone, I don't love you. And that's hurt them, right? But you have to be honest. Like, you don't love me. I've known people that have known me for 3 days and say, I love you. No, you don't love me.
Yeah.
What you're feeling is good, but I don't think it's love, right? But again, not to hurt their feelings and make sure that their feelings are valid, but you have to be honest with yourself, because it's so easy for us to go, I love you too.
Yeah.
Right?
And yeah, you just say it, and but no, it's got gravity to it. It's weight. There's a lot of weight to it. You have to think about it.
Yeah,
you're right. Yeah.
Cool. There you go.
Wow. That was amazing. Marcel, thank you so much. Thank you for telling me your story. Thank you for being vulnerable with me.
Oh, no, thank you. It was, as I said, it was when you first contacted me the first time, I was hoping you'd forget about me. And then you came back and went, damn it. And I'm going, okay, let's try this. And that's why I also wanted to talk to you first time, because we didn't know each other, right? I didn't want us just to message each other by email. I needed to hear your voice, right? And that's a big thing for me, right? Is that even with Instagram and in social media, I won't say hi to anybody or become people's friends unless I've actually been in front of you. Because so many people want to be friends, right? I'm going, I don't know who you are though, right?
Yeah, they're being superficial.
Yeah, and is that I... doing this was big for me, because I'm going, why am I doing it, right? And then I thought, you know what, and this, as I said, I talked to a few people and they said, just do it. And I said, why not? Here I am. So thank you for letting me be on.
Of course. I'm honored, and I actually don't know what to say. I'm very honored to have had you share your story with me, and I'm so happy for the work that you're doing in the city.
Thank you.
I appreciate it so much. It means a lot to see that that you're having an impact, and that you're working on the things you're working on. And I guess for anybody that's listening to this, Celeste, the lady that you mentioned, is Celeste Lemieux. She's a how would you describe her?
Jeez, she's a beautiful force, beautiful, beautiful person inside and out. She's a teacher. She's an amazing, amazing teacher. If you want to talk about someone that teaches, she teaches.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what she is. She's a beautiful, beautiful spirit that's in the world. She's a light that I'm glad that she's out there.
Yeah. So if anybody is looking for any of her wisdom, please reach out to her. Yeah. And then, is there anywhere else that you think people should be directed if they're looking for?
Oh, look up Gaber. If I'm saying his name wrong, Gaber Knight, Brené Brown. Those are amazing people to go to. I think some of the things that you're putting up on your podcast, and start listening to. I think podcasts are an amazing thing to put in the background to start hearing things. Right? Don't overdo it. You don't have to deal with everything that's traumatic and stuff like that. Right? Yeah. Get off TV for a while, go for a walk, read a book, do some art, learn to paint, learn to cry. and find your people, right? Find the people that are going to I think our goal should be is to help bring people up,
yeah,
and hold people up, right? Find those people that are going to stand beside you and lift you up. And I think that's it. I think that's a big thing for me, is that we all need those people to lift us up. Yeah.
I think so too. Wow. How can people find the youth group?
Go to cnyc.ca is the website. So Core Neighborhood Youth Co-op, you'll be able to Google that. My stuff, you can go to marcelpetit.ca, my website. Yeah, that's it.
Great. Well, I'm so happy that you've found the tools to work on what you need to. And thank you so much for sharing your story with me.
Thank you.